The cube had a built-in learning routine that analyzed every selection he made, and from the content of what he liked, constructed a preference profile that it used to search through the 1,800 available channels. One problem with that was that you couldn't communicate with the routine. Its only input was your choices. The first year or so after he was drafted, Julian had obsessively watched century-old movies, perhaps to escape into a world where people and events were simply good or bad. So now, when the thing searched, it dutifully came up with lots of Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne, and Julian had found through objective observation that it did no good to yell at it. Humphrey Bogart at Rick's. Reset. Jimmy Stewart headed for Washington. Reset. A tour of the lunar South Pole through the eyes of the robot landers. He'd seen most of it a couple of years before, but it was interesting enough to see again. It also helped deprogram the machine. Everyone looked up when I entered the room, but I suppose they would do that under any circumstances. Perhaps they kept looking a little longer than usual. There was an empty chair at a table with Marty, Reza, and Franklin. "You get her safely ensconced?" Marty asked. I nodded. "She'll be out of that place as soon as they let her walk. The three women she's sharing the room with are straight out of Hamlet."
"Macbeth," Reza corrected me. "If you mean crones, or are they sweet young lunatics about to commit suicide?"
"Crones. She seems okay. The ride up from Guadalajara wasn't bad, just long." The sullen waiter in the artfully stained T-shirt slouched over. "Coffee," I said, then caught Reza's look of mock horror. "And a pitcher of Rioja." It was getting on toward the end of the month again. The guy started to ask for my ration card, then recognized me and slumped away.
"Hope you re-enlist," Reza said.
He took my number and punched in the price of the whole pitcher. "When Portobello freezes over."
"Did they say when she'd be released?"
Marty asked. "No, neurologist sees her in the morning. She'll call me."
"Better have her call Hayes, too. I told him everything was going to be all right, but he's nervous."
"He's nervous."
"He's known her longer than you have," Franklin said quietly.
So had he and Marty.
"So did you see any Guadalajara?" Reza asked. "Flesh pots?"
"No, just wandered around a little. Didn't get into the old city or out to T-Town. What do they call it?"
"Tlaquepaque," Reza said. "I spent an eventful week there one day."
"How long have you and Blaze been together?" Franklin asked. "If you don't mind my asking." "Together" probably wasn't the word he was searching for. "We've been close for 3 years. Friends a couple of years before then."
"Blaze was his advisor," Marty said.
"Doctoral?"
"Postdoc," I said.
"That's right,"
Franklin said with a small smile.
"You came from Harvard."
Only an Eli could say that with a trace of pity, Julian mused. "Now you're supposed to ask me whether my intentions are honorable. The answer is, we have no intentions. Not until I get out of service."
"And how long is that?"
"Unless the war ends, about 5 years."
"Blaze will be 50.
52, actually. I'll be 37. Maybe that bothers you more than it does us."
"No,"
he said. "It might bother Marty." Marty gave him a hard look.
"What have you been drinking?"
"The usual." Franklin displayed the bottom of his empty teacup.
"How long has it been?"
"I only want the best for both of you," Marty said to me.
"You know that."
"8 years? 9?
Good God, Franklin. Were you a terrier in a former life?
Marty shook his head as if to clear it.
That was over long before Julian joined the department.
The waiter sidled over with the wine and three glasses. Sensing tension, he poured as slowly as was practical. We all watched him in silence.
So, Brezza said, how about them Oilers?
The neurologist, who came to see Amelia the next morning, was too young to have an advanced degree in anything. He had a goatee and bad skin. For half an hour, he asked her the same simple questions over and over.
When and where were you born?
August 12, 1996, Sturbridge, Massachusetts.
What was your mother's name?
Jane O'Banion Harding.
Where did you go to grade school?
Nathan Hale Elementary, Roxbury.
He paused.
Last time you said Breezewood in Sturbridge.
She took a deep breath and let it out.
We moved to Roxbury in 04, maybe 05.
Ah, and high school?
Still O'Brien. John D. O'Brien, School of Mathematics and Science.
That's in Sturbridge.
No, Roxbury. I went to middle school in Roxbury, too. You haven't...
What was your mother's maiden name?
O'Banion.
He made a long note in his notebook.
All right, stand up.
What?
Get out of bed, please. Stand up.
Amelia sat up and cautiously put her feet on the floor. She took a couple of shaky steps and reached back to hold the gown closed.
Are you dizzy?
A little, of course.
Raise your arms, please.
She did, and the back of the gown fell open.
Nice bottom, sweetheart,
croaked the old lady in the bed next to her.
Now, I want you to close your eyes and slowly bring your fingertips together.
She tried and missed. She opened her eyes and saw that she had missed by more than an inch.
Try it again, he said.
This time the two fingers grazed. He wrote a couple of words in the notebook.
All right, you're free to go now.
What?
You're released. Take your ration card to the checkout desk on your way out.
But... don't I get to see a doctor?
He reddened.
You don't think I'm a doctor?
No. Are you?
I'm qualified to release you.
You're released.
He turned and walked away.
What about my clothes? Where are my clothes?
He shrugged and disappeared out the door.
Try the cabinet there, sweetheart.
Amelia checked all the cabinets, moving with creaky slowness. There were neat stacks of linen and gowns, but no trace of the leather suitcase she'd taken to Guadalajara.
Likely somebody took 'em,
another old lady said.
Likely that black boy.
Of course, she suddenly remembered. She'd asked Julian to take it home. It was valuable, handmade, and there was no place here where it would have been secure. What other things had she forgotten? The John D. O'Brien School of Mathematics and Science was on New Dudley. Her office at the lab was 12-344. What was Julian's phone number? 8. She retrieved her toiletry kit from the bathroom and got the mini-phone out of it. It had a toothpaste smear on the punch plate. She cleaned it with a corner of her sheet and sat on the bed and punched in number 08.
Mr. Class is in class, the phone said. Is this an emergency?
No, message.
She paused.
Darling, bring me something to wear. I've been released.
She set the phone down and reached back and felt the cool metal disc at the base of her skull. She wiped away sudden tears and muttered,
"Shit."
shit.
A big square female nurse rolled in a gurney with a shriveled little Chinese woman on it.
"What's the story here?" she said. "This bed is supposed to be vacant."
Amelia started laughing. She put her kit and the Chandler book under her arm and held her gown closed with the other hand and walked out into the corridor. It took me a while to track Amelia down. Her room was full of querulous old women who either clammed up or gave me false information. Of course, she was at accounts receivable. She didn't have to pay anything for the medical attention or room, but her two inedible meals had been catered, since she hadn't requested otherwise. That may have been the last straw. When I brought in her clothes, she just shrugged off the pale blue hospital gown. She didn't have anything on underneath. There were 8 or 10 people in the waiting room. I was thunderstruck. My dignified Amelia? The receptionist was a young man with ringlets. He stood up.
"Wait! You can't do that!"
"Watch me." She put on the blouse first and took her time buttoning it.
"I was kicked out of my room. I don't have any place to—"
"Amelia!" She ignored me.
"Go to the ladies' room, right now." "Thank you, no."
She tried to stand on one foot and put a sock on, but teetered and almost fell over. I gave her an arm. The audience was respectfully quiet.
"I'm going to call a guard."
"No, you're not." She strode over to him in socks, but still bare from ankles to waist. She was an inch or two taller and stared down at him. He stared down, too, looking as if he'd never had a triangle of pubic hair touch his desktop before.
"I'll make a scene," she said quietly. "Believe me."
He sat down, his mouth working, but no words coming out. She stepped into her pants and slippers, picked up the gown, and threw it into the cycler.
"Julian, I don't like this place."
She offered her arm.
"Let's go bother someone else."
The room was quiet until we were well out into the corridor, and then there was a sudden explosion of chatter. Amelia stared straight ahead and smiled.
"Bad day?" "Bad place."
She frowned.
"Did I just do what I think I did?"
I looked around and whispered,
"This is Texas. Don't you know it's against the law to show your ass to a black man?" "I'm always forgetting that."
She smiled nervously and hugged my arm.
"I'll write you every day from prison."
There was a cab waiting. We got in fast, and Amelia gave it my address.
"That's where my bag is, right?"
"Yeah, but I could bring it over." My place was a mess. I'm not exactly ready for polite company.
"I'm not exactly company."
She rubbed her eyes.
"Certainly not polite."
In fact, the place had been a mess when I went to Portobello 2 weeks earlier, and I hadn't had time to do anything but add to it. We entered a one-room disaster area, 10 meters by 5 of chaos. Stacks of papers and readers on every horizontal surface, including the bed, a pile of clothes in one corner, aesthetically balanced by a pile of dishes in the sink. I'd forgotten to turn off the coffee pot when I'd gone to school, so a bitter smell of burnt coffee added to the general mustiness. She laughed.
"You know, this is even worse than I expected."
She'd only been here twice, and both times I'd been forewarned. "I know, I need a woman around the place."
"No, you need about a gallon of gasoline and a match."
She looked around and shook her head.
"Look, we're out in the open. Let's just move in together."
I was still trying to cope with the striptease. There's really not enough room."
"Not here," she laughed. "My place, and we can file for a 2-bedroom.
I cleared off a chair and steered her to it. She sat down warily. "Look, you know how much I'd like to move in with you. It's not as if we hadn't talked about it."
"So? Let's do it."
"No, let's not make any decisions.